Welcome to Your Brand Amplified, the podcast where we interview marketers, publicists, and brands to learn their stories, what makes them tick, and tips and tricks that make a difference.
I am so excited to be back for another week of Your Brand Amplified. I'm Annika Jackson, and I'm here with Robert Phelan. Robert, thank you so much for coming on today.
Thanks for having me, Annika. Super excited for the conversation.
Me too. Now, you have consulted for Shark Tank companies. You have had a lot of success in helping organizations exit and make lots of money. You have been a former head analyst for a private equity firm, and you've done so many other things. That's just a little taste. So I'd love for you to talk a little bit about what you're doing now and what your journey has been like.
For sure. I will try to keep it as succinct as, as possible. But now, from 30,000
feet. Give us all the details. Bring it on.
For sure. So yeah, my background, bachelor's in financial management. Currently, I've got a wife, two young kids. My son is our youngest. He's headed into kindergarten this semester. And then my daughter's in first grade this year. So dealing with that, we're right at the end of July when we record this. So getting ready for the school season to ramp up once again. But my background besides financial management was working for a private equity group out of the Midwest, was able to work up my way up to head analyst on the entire portfolio. So we had about $2.5 billion in assets at any given time, mainly focused in, you know, multifamily, business, commercial real estate. From there, my wife, you know, I made the mistake of taking a girl from the mountains to the plains of the Midwest. And so she's originally from Colorado Springs, all her family's there. So we decided what was best for our family in the long run was to take the leap out there. At that time, that was probably the first point in my life where I didn't know what I was going to do next. Like I love A, B, Z to Z mapped out and wasn't sure what was next. So ultimately decided, you know, I love the work that I did, but wanted to take that chance on going out on my own. So actually it would have been 3 years ago this month, celebrating kind of jumping into entrepreneurship, which is hard to believe. It sometimes it seems like it's been 10 years. Sometimes it seems like it's been one. But from there, started a financial planning practice, thought, hey, I've got investment management experience. I'd love to build personal relationships. You know, this is what's going to be it for me. Grew the practice very quickly over the first year and a half or so. Enjoyed it, but started to realize like my passion came from business owners and talking with startups, investors, just people that were up to big things. And what I found is when I went to the networking events, the first person they wanted to talk to wasn't the financial advisor in the room. And it was honestly like kind of the self-exploration of, hey, what advice are they looking for? What's missing for them in the marketplace? How do I build a life of just having conversations with cool people up to cool things, honestly? From that, discovered, hey, the advice that I'm providing doesn't line up exactly with what business owners are looking for. And there were kind of two common themes we saw. One, they were asking the wrong questions to the wrong people, or expecting the wrong services from the wrong people. And then two, on, you know, they have the business side of life, they've got their personal side of life, as I'm sure you're extremely familiar with, right? Being a business owner yourself. And a dollar in your business is not a dollar in your personal life. So and you know, those numbers continually conflict. You know, your spouse may want a vacation cabin in the mountains, and you want an assistant that helps free up your time and stress inside of your business. And where we tend to look for advice in those spaces, it could be a business coach, it could be a life coach, it could be an accountant, a CPA, you know, a marketing strategist, you know, PR, you know, like yourself. And a lot of times those spheres of advice are looking either solely at your personal side or solely at your business side. And even as a financial advisor, you know, I wanted to stretch into the business side of life for them because that was their greatest way to turn their success into personal wealth. But I was limited because of the licenses that I had, the advice that I could actually give. So ultimately launched out, started from zero all over again to really build a life of working with the people I wanted to work with in the way that I wanted to work with them. And that's what, you know, really I've been up to ever since.
Well, first of all, kudos to you for realizing that you could actually take your skill set and everything that you're really good at in the business world and translate it into something you're really passionate about and working with people that you wanted to work with. I think that's for me, that's something that's really important and a value that I hold dear is being really intentional with who I work with and making sure that we're the right fit. And it doesn't mean that everybody you say yes to or that you start working with, you might realize, oh, we actually are not the right fit once you get into that process. But starting out kind of knowing what will make your life easier, happier, feel more fulfilled in your work life that then will translate to your personal life. That's fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to hear, if you don't mind me asking a question too, of what is your kind of process for when you're deciding who do you not want to work with? Who do you say no to?
Yeah, it's been, this iteration of my life journey started in 2019 when I moved back to California from Texas and had to kind of restart my career because I left a successful, I had a business running in Houston still that unfortunately didn't last, very much longer than I was there. And then the pandemic hit. it was a social club and a retail store. So that, those things weren't really happening during the pandemic as much in the same way you couldn't show up in real life. So at first I just said yes to a lot because it was mostly referrals from other people that I trusted. No, I can trust, right? That's one of the things. And I would say yes also because I was figuring out exactly what I wanted my work life to be like as well. What I wanted my agency to be. Cause at first I was like, I'm just going to do PR, but my background's in marketing. And I hired people who were better at marketing side than PR side. So I had PR people. I also had people who were really good at graphics or web design or social media content. And so I realized I could offer my clients more services. So a lot of it was honestly experimentation, kind of like you, figuring out like what's going to work best for what will make my company work, the people that I want to work with as team members work well and be happy, and then also for our client success. Then I moved in, I merged with another firm that ended up being a kind of a mismatch. They're great, they do great work, but what I wanted to do and how I approached things was a little different, and my clients didn't like the difference. So it was a little difficult. So I had to kind of take a step back. I actually quit that company, didn't have anything else lined up. And now, though, I'm finding myself feeling really aligned with my values and who I am and how I want to show up. So now I'm starting to approach things more from like, who do I want to work with? Do they match my core values? Because I want to show up the same way at work as I do at home with my values, right? And so what are they doing in the world? And then I'm trying to still get better about having that spidey sense of like, yeah. Is this person, is that a red flag or a yellow flag? Do they really have the budget or do they really, have time to go through the process of working together and rebranding them and then, rebranding and then starting in on other marketing aspects of their work and then getting them to the PR stage. So I'm trying to be really intentional. And I think that's one of the hardest lessons to learn. And also surrounding yourself with the right people for finance. I mean, I've learned so many lessons from everything I did wrong and surrounding myself with people who really didn't know or weren't willing to say, well, let's look at this forecast or let's look at this. And let's really think about if you can afford to onboard 14 people as employees in 5 states and what that's going to do to your bottom line and your tax situation. So I think it's really now I feel like I'm kind of at that phase where you are. Right.
Yeah. No, absolutely. No, and I love that you brought up it sounds like you're following that same thing, but we talk about it in our team all the time is every new client is a new opportunity to reevaluate our process of who we work with. How can we sort out, see the red flags ahead of time? And we'll fully acknowledge we'll never have it perfect, but we're always going to pursue that perfection along the way. Mm.
So how has your life changed for the better since you've made these radical changes and really, spend more time thinking about what's going to make your personal life happy.
For sure. It was funny reflecting back. So when I was working at the private equity organization that I was at, my first child, I think we had her on a Saturday night and I was back to work on Monday. A lot of hours, there's a lot of great learning experience that I took from that, but there's also things that I learned that I value differently now with 2 kids and a wife. And a family. As far as what's changed for the better, I would say more of the flexibility. So it's funny. I always would joke of like, hey, I was working 80 plus hours a week, decided I wanted to keep my wife and kids around, probably needed to change. And I wake up and find myself that I'm probably working that much, if not more in some cases, but it's also the flexibility that entrepreneurship has given me and my family. Again, like this past weekend, being able to just take Saturday through Tuesday, we went to the mountains of Gatlinburg and just being able to relax and not have to stress about work getting done because we were able to set, you know, good expectations with our clients. Our team's really great about continuing to roll on gone. So that's, you know, it's been the flexibility, honestly, of not having to put in a 2 weeks notice or, you know, ask people for time off has been great. There's been the financial benefit, of course. Like this has been, you know, in some ways accelerated and decelerated our financial growth, decelerated some in the short term, right? Because of the amount of reinvestment that we've done over the past 3 years, but really accelerated where we've been able to grow and the opportunities we would have beyond just being a salaried employee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's really important to think about. And I know one of the things that you lend your expertise to is you talked earlier about, you know, yeah, money in our business is not, it does not equate, it is not the money that we just spend freely in our personal life. They are very, they have to be separate things for a number of reasons, just beyond yes. being good stewards of our organizations. But you do talk about transferring business success into personal wealth. And what are some of the challenges that you've seen and some of the aha moments also that you've been able to show your clients that when you're using those techniques, and what are those techniques?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the first few questions I like to ask people as I'm getting to know them is how do you pay yourself currently? And I get so many varied answers. I would say 70-80% of the time it's, hey, as I need money in my personal life, I write myself that check out outside the business. And which is, you know, they're pouring back into their business. There reaches a certain point though, that as you continue to grow and scale and add more people to the team, you know, I've seen business owners that wake up 3 years later, now they're doing $1 million to $3 million of revenue and they're making the same amount in their home life. And now they have the added stress of all these team members, more clients, more, you know, people that they're serving without any extra benefit into their home life. So it's not, there's, of course, I'm sure you've heard of the profit first model, right? Which is pay yourself first. So I'm a firm believer in that. I think actually you had somebody on a few episodes ago that talked about it, more of a simplified version, which I love that because that's very similar to what we talk to our clients about is, but the big thing is making sure that you're intentionally starting to pull money from your business beyond just what you need for your expenses. Mm-hmm. I'd say the other paradigm shift is like when I ask people, hey, what's the value of your business today? Mm-hmm. You know, very few will actually know the answer, really have thought about it in that way. But business, you know, as a line item and kind of your net worth statement for your life is one of the fastest ways that you can grow your personal and your family's net worth and your legacy and your impact along the way. So if we're not thinking about it as, you know, probably, you know, even beyond our house, right, that we own, like the business is the most valuable asset that we own, but we don't even know what it's valued at. So in the beginning, the first couple of years, right, it's very hard to tag a value. But one of the things we do like to do with our clients is to come up with, here's what the value of your business is today. So as we're starting to make these decisions about what they want for themselves in their life, how that not only impacts themselves, but how does it impact your business valuation and how does that grow your net worth? Over time. So between, you know, finding the right way to pay yourself and then starting to think of your business as an asset, as a line item on your personal balance sheet, those are the two first things we look at.
Wow. Yeah, that is definitely a paradigm shift. And I think I've often fallen into the trap of just paying myself when I needed to. And I'm trying to reverse that this time. So
yes,
yeah. So I'm like, you know, every conversation when I do podcast interviews, like the conversations I have come exactly when I need them to come into my life to remind me what I need to be doing.
Yes. No, I love it. And I mean, I always love, you know, the entrepreneurs that I see, and I see it in myself as well. Like, you know, us as entrepreneurs, we're sometimes our worst client as well, because the things that we do and teach other people to do, we're sometimes the last one to actually do those things that we know can be successful.
Absolutely. 100%. Yeah. The cobbler without shoes.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly that.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly that. Now I did mention financial forecasting a little bit earlier, just as something that I was not you know, working with as much in terms of like the person who was helping me with my company finances, really taking a look at that. But why and how do you think financial forecasting isn't necessarily the best measurement of success in business growth, and how does it fail?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So maybe if you don't mind, I'll answer that question with a question.
Yeah.
But when was the last time that you did forecasting where you looked at, hey, over the next year, this is what we think we could do as a business?
Oh, right before this conversation.
Right before this conversation. Great. Yeah. And did you look at that at the beginning of the year as well?
Well, the beginning of the year, I had merged with another firm and I did do the forecasting, and then my clients that I had counted on didn't want to be at that firm and left. Mm-hmm. And so my financial modeling completely went into the toilet.
Yep.
So
perfect.
So it was not successful. Yeah.
Yeah. So you just demonstrated one of the most like common reasons that, like, to me, financial forecasting in the traditional sense is really broken. Mm-hmm. I think financial forecasting as we do it today, which is, hey, where are we going to be a year, 5 year, 10 years today? It's really good when we're trying to get our team hyped up and like pointed towards the future in a particular direction. And then the second is, hey, if you're trying to raise money from investors, you got to show them, hey, this is, you know, and kind of pitch it to yourself in a way of like, okay, here's where this business could go. But as far as like defining what success is in your business, it's typically a really poor measure for the exact reason you laid out. The forecast you made 6 months ago is completely and utterly irrelevant today. And it's the same thing even in our business. As we grow, we love to, you know, lay out, look, you know, give ourselves a particular direction for the year. So where we've backed into with our clients is typically the longest forecast that we ever do is 3 months.
Oh,
so we revolve our years around 12 weeks. There's a book out there called 12 Week Year. We subscribe to some of that philosophy, but we try to come up with a particular direction for the company. We kind of have that North Star where we're headed. But then in reality, it's like, hey, a year out from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, so much is going to change. The market's going to change. It's going to pivot. You're going to move from Houston to California. And really, if we're trying to measure ourselves, you know, to see if we're successful against that, it's really worthless at that point. So most of the time, a big change has happened in a company, or we haven't even looked at that forecast we made 6 months ago that's in the trash can or in the filing cabinet somewhere. So actually, to be helpful, what we found is looking at the next 3 months. What can we do? We tend to, as entrepreneurs, have a little better grasp of what the next month to 3 months holds.
Yeah.
And then it also opens up the opportunity for myself personally. I found 3 months is just enough time to keep my focus in a particular direction and then reevaluate and give myself grace of like, hey, maybe we need to pivot. Maybe we're ahead of schedule and we actually need to push ourselves further. Maybe we're behind and we need to look for different ways to get revenue at the table. So for us, we've kind of gotten rid of the 1 year, 5 year, 10 year model. Let's look at, from a financial forecast, what are we going to do over the next 3 months? Where that runs into trouble is like, we do work with some e-commerce companies that they have to order inventory for 6, 9, 12 months out, depending on how shipping overseas is. So there is that aspect of it. But as far as planning the team, planning our operating expenses, et cetera, we're trying to look as much as we can at the here and now plus the next 3 months.
Yeah. That brings an interesting point up, because that is often how we work in PR. When we're putting together a strategy for a client, we want to look at the next 3 months and what we're going to do. And then every month we say, okay, what worked this month? What didn't work? Who are we waiting to hear back from? Or did our message fall flat for the journalists? Do we need to pivot to a different message? We don't look at 1 year, 5 years, yeah, 10 years down the road, to your point. So I'm like, oh, a light bulb moment.
Yeah. No, and it's just, you know, it's one of those traditional things that everybody does, is you have to have a goal for the year and have to, you know, we forecast for 12 months or 3 years or 5 years. And it's, but then to your point of like, when we plan in other areas of business, are we trying to do that for a year? Are we actually really trying to get granular about the next month, you know, 6 to 12 weeks?
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things that is the bane of every small business owner, I'm on the QuickBooks Small Business Council. So, you know, we have meetings every once in a while and hear reports about what's going on the national level. you know, what's going on in different state levels with our taxes and with small business, you know, all the different things that are changing every year, all the tax codes. And sure. So another thing that you are really good at giving advice on is reducing your relationship with the IRS as a small business owner. What are some tips and tricks or things that people should look out for when they're thinking about that? Because I know personally, again, I'm like, I'm just getting some free advice from you right now. For
myself. Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
It's awesome. But I didn't think about the implications of, if I have team members in different states, and because I live in California, I wanted to set them up as employees because the laws here are a little tricky around contractors versus employees.
Yes.
I didn't think about, this means I have to report 4 times a year to each of these states on these things. Yes. And have, it's quite a lot to navigate.
For sure. For sure. First off, when it comes to payroll, and we've got teams that work in different states as well, just use a payroll provider that automates all the outsource as much as you can away. Cause that's none of the fun stuff. Like, I don't think you got in business to do payroll. I didn't get in business to do payroll, even though I'm in finance. The other as far as reducing your relationship with the IRS, I think one of the things that's lost, I think earlier when I mentioned, hey, we're asking the wrong questions to the wrong people, or the spheres of advice are looking strictly at our business or personal life, is one of the greatest disconnects I've seen has been business owners and their CPAs, or business owners and their tax filers, or business owners and their bookkeepers. And a lot of times the best bookkeepers are supposed to be keeping you in compliance with the IRS. Their goal is to keep you out of jail, keep you in compliance, like avoid an audit or be ready for an audit when it comes. And then we turn to them and ask them to do proactive tax planning for us. And what I found is, like, the best bookkeepers are not the best tax planners, and the best tax planners are not the best bookkeepers. So we're trying to take people that we sign them up to do a certain thing and set. And a lot of people have come to me with frustration about their bookkeeper. And when we actually get to the root of it, it's just, hey, we're asking them to do something that is not in their wheelhouse or shouldn't be in their wheelhouse. When it comes to tax planning, I don't like when I hear, like, hey, the reason we did this is because, like, that's just the general rule of thumb. So a lot of general rule of thumbs I've heard CPAs thrown out there is, hey, when you hit $1 million in revenue, you should be a C corp. Or when you hit $70,000 in revenue, you should be an S corp, right? And start to save on taxes. A lot of it has to do also individually with what you want outside of your business. I'll give a specific example. So if I'm a business owner, I have $100,000 in revenue, I have some assets, you know, maybe a truck in the business or something like that. You know, my tax filer may look and say, hey, we can take more depreciation or kind of accelerate the expense of the truck and help lower your taxable income for this year. Mm-hmm. Where I've seen some of my clients run into trouble before we started working together was, hey, then they went to go get a mortgage to buy a house, and the bank is looking at them and saying, hey, you make no money because you wrote off most of your income as well, which that tax person was, hey, doing their job, trying to mitigate as much of the tax burden in this current year. We have to balance that with, what do you want in the future, you know, over the next 1 year, 2 years? Does that fall inside your business? Does that fall inside your personal life? So that tax plan really has to be specific to you. Another example is, hey, you know, 401ks, you know, and invest, you know, 401ks typically available for the 9-to-5ers out there, but also important for business owners to think about their retirement. Most of the business owners that I work with, they want their business to grow, so they want to reinvest in their business, and then they want to invest in real estate or some other asset. They don't get excited about the stock market per se, because they can see it going up and down, and their business feels risky enough as it is. Right. So while an accountant may say, hey, you need to dump as much as you can into this SEP IRA or this 401k, their values and what they want for themselves in their life, you know, they can't touch that money until they're 59 and a half or older, and they may want to retire early, et cetera. So they're a great tax strategy. You know, I talk to a lot of my clients because we do tax planning as well. Is, hey, we could probably get most people's tax burden close to zero in most years outside of payroll taxes.
Yeah.
But we, you know, for every, you know, benefit, there's also a cost to that, right? So we may be able to get most of your taxable income versus, you know, via trust, some other strategies close to zero. But you may not be able to touch this money for 30 years. Is that what you want? So we have to find that right mix between, hey, what are we willing to take off the table today because it provides more flexibility over the next 10 years versus how, you know, how close to zero are we really trying to get in the long run?
Yeah. All things to think about. So, and you mentioned that you have employees in many states. So how does it work to work with you and your team?
Yeah, absolutely. So for most of their clients right now, I'll be the main point of contact in a lot of cases. We have an experienced manager. Then we have more of a person that works more in our strategic marketing side. So we don't do a lot of the tactical marketing, but we do work with strategic marketing in some cases. So right now, it's funny, you actually brought up your pivot with this company that you merged with. So back last year, I merged with an agency because I had finance, they had marketing. Thought it was, you know, a match made in heaven. We dated, you know, quote unquote, for 9 months, trying to figure out any red flags, like, do we work well together? And ultimately merged those two organizations together. And then towards the beginning of this year, like, figured out, hey, that's not, that's not what's right for both sides. So ultimately kind of made a painful transition out of that and really pulled back what we were doing. So really we started, you know, going back to the 80-20 rule, you know, 80% of our time was taken by, you know, 20%, you know, or sorry, you know, basically 80% of our clients was taking the majority of our time while providing 20% of the revenue. Mm-hmm. So we scaled greatly back with who we were working with and started to go deeper with the client relationships we had beyond that. So for example, like our average ticket price before was maybe $625 to $2,000 a month prior. And then with the clients we've been bringing on recently, it's been closer to that $7,000 to $10,000 a month range as well, which has slowed down, of course, business development, but has freed up our time and the relationship we're able to drive with the clients that we do have.
Yeah. Do you, well, besides working with clients, because I feel like you have so much advice that people really need to hear and learn from, do you offer mini courses or do you have an ebook or other ways for people to find out all of the business tips and tricks that you're offering to us right now?
Yeah. So I've had people push me for the ebook, the content and stuff like that. And I need to be better about that, right? Because I hear it's the thing to do. But what I've always said is like, hey, I'll give an hour of my time to anybody under the condition that they'll actually take action out of it if we come up with something good. So I used to give out a lot of time for free, especially early on in business. You know, this person has a pulse and they want to talk to me. Absolutely, I'll buy you coffee. Now I'm much more selective about that. But I want people that are going to be willing to take action. So I'll sit down with an hour for anyone. So the best way to do it is probably reaching out to me on LinkedIn and we can just easily set up a time to connect. But I love having conversations about what people are up to and the big things that they're building.
Yeah. And you have such interesting perspective having been on so many sides of business, from the private equity and helping companies exit to being an entrepreneur yourself and understanding kind of that mindset and the pitfalls that we go through as entrepreneurs on that different side. So what are some other things that you think are important for people to consider when they're looking at setting up their finances properly for their business? And then, as you keep mentioning, which I think is a really important message for everybody to hear, also taking in consideration what you want in your personal life.
For sure. So one of the things we like to step back at is like starting with the core values, right? And I love that you brought that up earlier of like aligning yourself to, you know, what do you value? What do you want out of your life? And what we found is like, hey, numbers are just numbers. Like sometimes the numbers tell you to make this decision, but it does not align with who you are as a person or individual. So where we like to step back and start with is, hey, what do you actually value out of life? Is it freedom? Is it flexibility? Is it wealth? Is it generosity? Starting with that, and then let's get rid of the business entirely and just talk over the next year, over the next 3 years, over the next 5 years, what do you want for yourself? And again, going back to, we know 3 and 5 years, it's going to change pretty heavily, you know. But what, you know, are you trying to provide more flexibility for your family? We hear we want to travel more. We want to invest in real estate and Airbnbs and things outside of the business as well, kind of diversify their income. And then we bring that back to the conversation of finance. So when somebody is starting off, usually finance can and bookkeeping and taxes and everything like that can be kind of the scary black box we want to stick in the closet and forget. And the challenge is, as we go through business, it just gets worse and worse and worse and scarier and scarier and scarier as we go along. So it's just being willing to surround yourself with the right people. I mean, there's plenty of free resources out there to start with. There's plenty of people that have been there before you that are willing to sit down and give free advice. So I'd say my first piece of advice would be, don't wait too long to start having a serious conversation about your finances when you're starting out. And then the second piece I'd say is starting, again, bringing values back to the forefront. So if your CPA, if your bookkeeper, if your advisor, if your business coach isn't really aware of what you value and what you want out of life, like, are they going to give you the best advice for how you're building your business, how you're structuring your finances? How much money should you be taking outside of the company? Mm-hmm. And the answer is, like, they're probably giving you a good advice. They're probably pointing you in the right direction. Is it truly what's best for you and what you want out of life? Maybe not.
Yeah. So I feel like in your business, the way you're approaching it is more holistic and really looking at the whole person, the whole self, the whole life, and making sure that what you're offering as advice and different strategies and where money should go is personalized.
Yep. Absolutely. So we like to say we provide strategic thinking and planning for both the business and personal side of life. And we do that, you know, through a lens of finances. The other fun part for me was making this leap into, we don't have products to sell, like, outside of our advice and our services. Like, our goal, you know, most clients we work with are going to save, you know, 2 to 3 times our fee just in the tax planning that we do alone. So that's always fun to start off with. And then, you know, after that, we're able to help them, you know, connect to the right resource. You know, maybe it is a financial advisor, maybe it is an insurance person, et cetera. We don't have any products to sell you. I'd say the only caveat to that is, like, we ended up on one of my 5-year goals, again, that got pushed into a 1-year goal, was to be back into private equity and real estate. So we had some of our clients push us to launch a couple of different funds where we raised capital. We bought some apartment buildings over the past year. So we do help if people want to invest in real estate and don't want to be a landlord. We do provide that option as well for folks.
Okay. And you work with people wherever they are. There's no limit on that.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say out, you know, north of $15 million in revenue, like, that's about the max that we like to work with, just because at that point, the goal is you should be having an internal team that's helping you with that at most, you know, at most parts. On the startups, if they're brand new, like, I've started a model where we've started to take equity in companies for exchange for our services if they can't afford our fee up front. But yeah, we try to find a way to work with the right folks that we enjoy being around.
Awesome. So what is the easiest way? You said LinkedIn, reaching on LinkedIn, your website. What are the best ways for somebody to find you and get more information about how you approach things so differently and, you know, and see if they're a good fit?
For sure. I like connecting on LinkedIn. Just, you know, one, to continue to collaborate and network with other folks across, you know, wherever they may be. And then just, grabbing a virtual coffee, as we call it. Just get on Zoom and ask a lot of questions and learn about people. That's my favorite way to connect.
Nice. Awesome. Well, and we'll have all of your information in the show notes and on our website and everything. But Robert, I always like to next ask people, if you have a favorite quote or mantra.
Ooh, favorite quote or mantra. So there's a quote given to me by one of the business coaches that I had in the past, and it's, leaders are remembered by the questions that they ask. And that's always stuck with me, because I'd say I enjoy podcasting. I enjoy sitting on the other side though more and getting to ask the questions a lot too. And I'm introverted in that way too. But that's, you know, one of the adventures I went on over the past year and a half to 2 years has been, hey, how can I ask really good questions or really good people? And it's interesting to see what happens out of that.
Yeah, that is a good reminder. We have to listen. We have to be able to sit back and hear what's happening around us, because otherwise, working in a vacuum, it just doesn't work. It doesn't work for anybody. It doesn't work for the success of our businesses. Now, this does lead me back to, are there other questions that people are asking that are not the right questions? And what are the right questions to ask?
That's a great question. I'd say, you know, we've brought on some business development folks in the past to help us, and they're very quick to jump into, you know, very specific questions about their business. Hey, how are you paying yourself? Some of those questions that I brought up, you know, how much revenue are you doing? And what we've found is, because our model's a little bit different, like all we need to do, get them to, you know, get an individual to understand is, hey, we really understand you're at point A. We really understand where you're at today. And we really understand point B and point C in your life. And we're there to help get you through those phases. And we don't have a perfect 5-step system to build wealth, right? It's individualistic. So if we're not taking the time to ask the questions about their personal side of life, getting to know their kids, their families, like what do they actually want to build? Like that's a different type of relationship than just jumping into the business side of it. One of my other favorite questions that I learned again from the same business coach was, you know, kind of closing out a conversation was, you know, what are the questions in this conversation I should have asked, but didn't ask. And you'd be amazed the number of things that I've learned just from that question. Cause usually a business owner, you know, when we're sitting down, whether we're networking or having conversations, we do want to present the best light to people. Like there's, you know, even in these conversations, there's plenty of challenges that we face and are continuing to face on our side. It's not all roses and rainbows over here. But it's, you know, usually that last tail end question that we get a lot more information, learn a lot, and just build a deeper relationship that maybe somebody hasn't asked them that before.
Yeah. Okay. I like that. And I, again, to our audience, these are all great things to think about when you're looking at who you're going to trust with your finances, your wealth, your equity in your business and in your personal life. So on that, Robert, is there anything else that you wanted to share today?
No, I think that, I could continue on with these conversations all day, every day, but I just want to thank you so much for letting me connect with your audience and the value that you're bringing to them. I'm excited to continue to listen to future episodes.
Great. Thank you so much. I appreciate you very much coming on the show today. I've learned a lot as well. And thank you all for listening. And I'll be back again next week with another episode of Your Brand Amplified. Want more? Check out amplifywithannika.com or follow me on socials at amplifywithannika.